So, hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Allison in Wonderland Mental Health Podcast. I have a special guest today. I'm going to let her introduce herself as usual, and we're going to go over some really interesting things. I know we're definitely going to cover postpartum depression, which is something we have not covered yet. And then we have a lot of other really great things we want to talk about. So, Jeannie, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Jeannie Wright, and what I do for work is I help moms recover from physical ailments, but I have a long history and understanding of mental health just from my life experience. And so I do support women like emotionally and spiritually through their process of healing physical, because as we know, it's nothing's truly separated, but my main training is the physical recovery.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, it's really amazing. I know I was looking at your site, happymamabody.com, and it's, and there are, I mean, I'm so far out from when I had my children, but there are all these things where I'm like, I would have never even known to even think about these things that go on with the physical healing of your body. I mean, I had my baby before everyone was on social media telling you how to have a baby. You know, I remember when my siblings went through it, they had all of this information they gathered from all of the mommy forums, and that was not there when I had my son. So it's interesting, all of the resources now, but things that I think still a lot of women may not know, you know, that other people are going through. You don't know, oh, this is, you know, part of, you know, this physical reaction. This is an emotional reaction. And I think that that's one of those things is who tells us those things? How do we know when we need help with those, with the moments and the things that are changing with us as women?
Yeah, that is such a huge mountain, right? Because unfortunately, we aren't given the training before we have kids. Like, I really feel like there needs to be so much more. And I think about kind of like, I don't know, it's easy to fantasize about what the past looked like, but I think of kind of like, tribes and like them just like passing on all the wisdom that they learned within a tribe. And it's just like we're in these isolated little tribes. We're very isolated. And so, and especially if you're not like my mom wasn't a capable mom. And so I was separated from her. She was not involved in my pregnancy. I didn't have any wisdom handed down to me. And I did know that my genetics were very sensitive. So I went through horrid postpartum depression. And so after that obviously happened to me, I became fascinated with the subject. I was very vocal on social media in my group, and everybody's like, "Oh my gosh, thanks for being so honest. Like, wow, you're talking about this." Like, and I think the norm is that you're supposed to be ashamed, you're supposed to keep it quiet, and then once you pass that phase, you never talk about it again. And so it's 8 years past, and when I saw your podcast, I was like, "Hell yeah, I want to get on there and talk about postpartum depression, because I'm not going to be one of those people that just like, okay, I went through it, I'm done, I'm never going to talk about it again because I'm so ashamed." I am not ashamed that I went through that, and I'm not, it doesn't make me a less of a, and I think that's what it is because we're so into, we live in an ableist society, and we all need to be capable and independent, and we are not a co-interdependent society. And I am just, it breaks my heart sometimes how many women will just completely suffer in silence. The what people want from other people is to show the A game face. Like, we want to see the A game face. We don't really, really want to know what's going on with somebody else. But I don't have a filter.
That's why people say, "Are you doing okay?" And they don't expect you, or you know what I mean? They don't expect you to say no. They just expect you to be like, you know, "How are you doing? Okay." Like it's just it's what you say. And I'm guessing that, you know, this shame that people, you know, kind of expect you to have around this postpartum depression is that you just had a baby. Why aren't you happy? You have this baby. Don't you love your baby? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and I can imagine being in that cycle in your brain and just feeling so guilty that you aren't feeling all of that joy. I honestly have no idea if I experienced any kind of postpartum depression. I just remember being exhausted because my husband traveled all the time. And I had a, you know, a 3-year-old at home and then a newborn. And I don't know if there, and I also have had, you know, bouts of depression throughout my whole life. So I have no idea if I, if it was something, I don't know. Like I know I was very hormonal through my pregnancy. I know that I've always had very hormonal cycles before my hysterectomy. So it would not surprise me if that hormone surge also had put me into some degree of postpartum depression. But I do know that earlier in my life, I would be very cautious about saying that I wasn't happy with what I have, or feeling like I had to justify what I was saying. Okay, I really do love my family. I'm glad of these things, but I'm just sad and I don't know. So like I'd have to explain why it was okay for me to say that I'm sad, even though these things are going okay. And so I can, I feel like, especially when it comes to postpartum depression, it's a really hard thing to admit. Oh my gosh, I'm depressed. Yes, I have this beautiful baby, but I'm depressed. And it's really terrible. And I love the tribe mentality. I've talked to so many really strong women since I started this podcast. And this tribe mentality that women used to have has come up on more than one conversation about so many issues where it's obviously, women need a tribe, and that's what we've lost. We're so connected in so many ways. We've all lost our tribe, though. And I just think it's amazing that you brought it back to that, because it seems to keep coming up in all of these conversations I'm having.
Yeah, it is so fascinating. And I think because COVID happened, we lost our tribe even more, and we got even more isolated. And I think people are still... There's a lot of PTSD, not like your obvious PTSD, but like kind of this undergrade PTSD as a culture, that I think there's a lot of healing that needs to happen around that, because we were already isolated.
Right.
And so, you know, I think, so I read a lot about, like, cause you hear these like insane stories about postpartum psychosis. And I dig into them because I'm like, what was that woman's tribe like? What was happening? And almost always, in a lot of cases, the woman was reaching out for help, but she lived, I think, actually the big issue is she lived in a tribe that was very, very okay with just saying, I'm okay.
Right.
Like not diggers, not outspoken, not very, maybe very polite culture.
Right. You know,
perhaps. But it's the women that have the smart tribes that are like the rebel tribes that are just like, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to do this, and we're going to get this woman healthy. And like the bees, are the hawks come in and they save that woman. You know, and it's just like that woman cannot save herself if she's in a true mental health crisis. She cannot do it. The people around her.
Right. Absolutely. I know it's so, after my mom passed away, my mom and my dad, I don't even remember them being married. They divorced when I was 2. So after she passed away in 2010, I sent him this long email asking questions, because I never got the true story. I always got like the he said, she said of them going on. But I did ask him, I asked him things like, why do I collect clowns? You know what I mean? Like all of these random things where it was like, apparently when they got divorced, he read a book that was like, collecting things is good to help your child through a divorce. And so he started collecting clowns for me. And people are like, you collect what? So it's just these very weird things. But then also I was like, you know, obviously y'all were okay for a little while. What happened? And he said that, and of course, this is one of those things you never want to tell your child, because it's like, oh, it was my fault, which obviously it wasn't. He said that she was fine. And when she had me, they couldn't make the epidural stop something. I don't know. They couldn't. The epidural went wrong after she had me, and she had a migraine for like a month. And then she was just never the same again. Now, I don't know how much truth that is to it, or if that was the first time he noticed that there was an issue or, you know, a first major change. But in my mind, I'm like, well, where were her sisters? Where were her friends? Like, obviously something's happened. And then, and just knowing that she suffered with bipolar disorder and things like that, I know it had to have been more than that. I'm wondering if that was when she like hit the limit of where she could fake it anymore. Because it's just the strangest, this is the weirdest. I never expected that answer. I was like, I don't.
Yeah, no. So, you know, and I just said somebody else has to save the woman. And that is like actually in no way would I ever want to put blame on the community, like people around the person.
Right.
Yeah. So because, but what I'm thinking of is actually like a very particular situation. And so you're saying that your mom after you.
After me. Yes, had from what I have gathered, had a major personality change, and that is when she started dating her second husband. I think that she was pregnant with my little sister before the divorce papers were final with my dad. But at the same time, this is someone else's view of how it happened. So there was a change when she, after she had me, and it had something to do with the epidural not stopping correctly. I don't know, sciencey medical things. And she had a migraine for about a month. And that was when the change happened. And I'm not sure. I mean, I know that she had mental health issues that are not related specifically to things like that. So I'm not sure if that was just when she stopped faking whatever, stop like, you know, rallying.
Well, I think if you can't rally, like, I think the changes that can happen from birth are so profound. So some women like actually get healthier through the process and some women go downhill. Like I got an autoimmune disorder and I know that was what brought, like my body probably already had certain things going on. And then when I got pregnant, my system just, it was too much. And then also you do have to think about, like, you know, somebody already has something going on there, or if they have these really sensitive genetics. And then, you know, I just feel like we need to bring so much care and devotion and the sacredness of what our bodies are and like what we put into everything that we put into our body is, you know, especially for those that are of us that are sensitive, is so, it's like, it can be either medicine or poison, right? And it's all about amount, right? So maybe she was allergic to something in that epidural, who knows that, it sounds like her brain got flared. Migraine is, you know, in the brain. And it sounds like she had massive inflammation in her brain. And so I don't think it was that she couldn't fake it anymore.
Right. Yeah.
The tipping scale.
Right. And it's interesting. And also with that, you know, I remember, I mean, I was 20 when I had my son. So, I mean, everything was very clinical. I went to the doctor. The doctor told me these were the things. Those were the things that we did. Like, I even remember telling him that, you know, all of the women in my family are little and they have big babies and they always have to have a C-section. And his response was, well, that's not true. Or you wouldn't be here at some point, someone. And I'm like, well, yeah, you know, my grandmother had how many stillborn or whatever babies before they reached that point. But I know that through the delivery process, I think that he started questioning his decision to not do the C-section. But it was all very medical because there wasn't any community. I did have a stressful relationship with my mother and even just like, I did not want her to be at the hospital when I had my son, because I knew she'd come in and take over. She was a nurse. I knew that, you know, it would be kind of the Linda show and it would, you know, so, we lived in different states. She did not come up. And it's interesting because it seems like if you don't have this clinical thing, I also know people who are midwives and doulas, and they, even though it's illegal in some states, they'll have like accidentally have their baby at home and then and have their home birth and then take it to the hospital. But it seems like that is giving you this it's giving you the tribe, it's giving you the circle that you have. And I'm not saying, hey, I probably would never go for home birth just because I in a hospital with the meds, that was strong, hard enough for me. But more power to the people that can do it naturally. But maybe that whole support system throughout the whole pregnancy would have been a really great thing to have, because it's, you know, the same like your relationship with your mom. I didn't have a tribe. All of my siblings were so much younger than me. My friends weren't having babies yet. I lived in a different state from everyone I knew. Like, I am obviously so much younger than everyone that has adult children. So I've never really had a group that I fit with. And that tribe, it seems like, would have been really, really helpful through all of that.
Yeah. You know, and I think it's interesting because we're just creatures of habit. And it's like, I know everybody talks about a tribe and having a tribe. And here's the thing. It's like, if you come from a family that wasn't like supportive, and where there is abuse and mental health, and just, this is my observation from, cause I have a couple of friends that are outspoken about like wanting a tribe and being honest about their own mental health stuff and being honest about their lack of family support and what a struggle it is to live in the kind of nuclear family that we live in. And my observation is, and this is, you know, part of my own journey, is like, how do you define tribe? How do you let that in? And I think that people that didn't have that, like, to start with, like a really solid foundation of the family, like support. I can speak for myself, and my observation of a few other people is that we talk about the lack of that, but we're so embedded in our own habits that we don't even know how to create that. There's just like the foundation's not there. We don't know how to ask for help in effective ways until we're like screaming, crying for it, you know? And so what I've noticed is like, cause I do have friends that totally have tribe, who have all the support in the world and more. And I'm like, how do you do it? And I watch them and I notice that they just have no problem asking for what they need, and they do it in an effective way. And they really understand that like give and take cycle. And it's not all jarred up. It's like that smooth, energetic give and take. And I know for me, it's like, I ask for help and I'm like, oh fuck, I'm not supposed to ask for help. Okay. Like, I'm going to be weird about it.
Yeah. Like, and I'm more about offering help and giving help, but not asking for it, because I don't want to be a burden to anybody. I want to be the one that's helping everybody. And I know we both talked about just like crazy childhood, you know, how, you know, when there's mental illness in the family, the things that you learn, and mine was very much to be the caregiver and to not make things more difficult. So I've started really changing that a little bit now, like with the podcast, and I'm writing a memoir, and some people are getting a little upset about things that I'm talking about that have been quiet this whole time. But I'm very much about the give, but I forget to ever take any of the help that I, or ask for help when I need it. I'll just go lay in bed and just be like, leave me alone. I don't have any more spoons. Leave me alone.
Yeah, I know, because you're just giving all the time. Yeah, no, that is very, very common. Very common to just, you know, and there's something so beautiful about receiving, like I have someone in my life who's like that. When I try to give, like, it's not received very well. And that's very painful, not to like, when someone wants to help you or to give to you, and to reject that help, you know? And, so it's like, how do you, you know, it's like easy to say, oh, like, get better at asking for help. But I really think there is an art. There's so much art. There's so much like deep therapy like involved, and it's a really, really big process to learn to have a healthy relationship with give and take. And it ebbs and flows, right? You know, it's like some days you are probably good at asking for help. Yeah
I mean, it's definitely interesting, and I know that everybody kind of comes at it from their own, you know, from their own upbringing, from their own, you know, journey that they get to, you know, and I've met a lot of different people where people are like, oh, well, they're selfish. And I'm like, I don't know that they're even really acting selfish. They're just taking care of themselves. So
100%. And, you know, like, you know, I had my sister and the same crazy dysfunctional family was always telling me I was selfish when I was just doing something that I needed to do to take care of myself.
Right. And I'm like, maybe I need to, because I am terrible at self-care. And I'm like, oh, I forgot to eat and I forgot to do this. Or I'm like, when was the last time I took a shower? Like, I'll just get so wrapped up in everything else. And I've been, you know, now that I'm in this empty nesting phase, I'm trying really hard to figure out what that self-care is for me, but just finally being, and it's not even that it's selfish, but just being able to take care of myself. But I still have a bunch of people I take care of, but also making sure I'm one of them.
100%. Like I go back and forth between like being able to really care for myself. And I have, you know, just, it is funny how, there's so many layers to this, right? Because woman in general, I think whether you come from like a crazy family or not, we are more naturally nurturing and more naturally giving. And as a mother, like whoosh. And, you know, it's like a lot of what I teach, like in my program, is about parenting and about like balancing like that give to yourself. Because if you've gone through the wayside, too many negative emotions are going to be coming up. And it's like, we don't want those. Nothing against negative emotions, because actually we want all of our feelings. That's the truth. But like, you know, we want that balancing, you know, we don't want to tip the scale to too much negativity. And if our cup is empty, we know this, like, I think on some level that we have to fill our own cup. But yeah, I'm very, very much into like, I have to fill my cup first and then I can put on other people's oxygen mask.
Yeah. It's like, make sure you put your mask on first. That makes complete sense. I know we talked a little bit before we hit record about the, like the DNA of it and how it's inherited and things like this. And so I had a mindfulness coach once that told me that I have been stressed since I was in the womb. That is what, like, seriously. So she was like, your mother had bipolar disorder. You've been stressed since you were in the womb. She's like, and most people, their stress is like at this line. And for anyone that's just listening to this and not watching it, I'm holding a line up. They're at like this line. And then when they get stressed out, it goes up, you know, but they're like, she's like, you're already at the top all the time. You're constantly at that. So it, you know, and then she eventually fired me because I'm really terrible at mindfulness. She tried to send me to a hypnotist. He was like, oh, there's no help for her. And then, but I did find a really great therapist after her, through her recommendation.
Yeah. Well, you know what I've learned from having a kid who was diagnosed with autism is that, you know, I think that there like is like a subspecies of human. And I don't think it's less. Like, people totally misunderstand autism. They think it's a mental health, and it is known as a disability because you do need a lot of support if you're autistic. But what I realize is, because like a lot of his behaviors early on in childhood would look as if like almost like he's being abused or something, because he had a dysregulated nervous system. And, you know, we've worked with a neurodivergent therapist for like the last year, you know, to help support our son. And I was, you know, coming from an abusive background and a family, as a parent, I was like, hypervigilant about anybody seeing me as like this abusive mom, because I had this dysregulated child and I didn't know why at first. And I'm like, a lot of the outward manifestation of it, like you know, is that dysregulated nervous system. And it really brought to light for me that I'm like, wow, I think both of my parents were autistic, and they did not, like, I really feel like if this world was different, if we were more sensitive, like that kind of, like, I really feel like it's almost like a subspecies of human. And it's like, I just don't feel like the world is necessarily like created for them. But if we had like different if you lived in a place that had different expectations of people and different like understanding of people, I feel like the autistic brain could expand and be great. And you will see, like, with autistic children, if they're in the right environment, they're like, it's all good, you know?
Yeah.
And so I do, it's like, what came first, the chicken or the egg? And I think it's really hard because what happens to our grandparents and what happened to their grandparents, it changes the DNA structure. So it's like, for me, I feel like I'm not working with just Jeannie. I'm working with an inheritance of many, many people that came before me. And, you know, I've done so much therapy, and I remember I had one therapist who really was not neurodivergent affirming. So I kind of like want to just say this to having a regulated nervous system all the time, because like that is not the ultimate picture of healing, like to be calm and to be neurotypical. Like that is like, I'm sorry, but like, you don't have to be anything different to be healed. You know, it's like from my perspective, it's like, you're killing it, you know? So it's like, I don't know. I think it's a fantasy that like some people are just gonna like snap their finger and like have self-regulation. Like I honestly, like, cause there's hardwired and then there is like structurally wired differences in the nervous system. And if we learned about neurodivergent brains to begin with, like what if like before you ever became a parent, we like talked about like the differences of brain instead of expecting everybody to be the same, then for those of us that are different, wouldn't have to look at ourselves through this neurotypical lens, you know? So I don't know. I've obviously like done a really lot of like in-depth research and like connecting to the autism community, and just like, it's horrible what we do to people that are unique and different, you know? And just like, you know, especially with working with therapists, because it's all about like the polyvagal theory, which I love the idea of regulating my nervous system. I love meditation. Like, as a mom, do I have?
I'm the worst. My brain will not shut up for it.
Yeah. And that's, you know, maybe your patients looks different, you know, like maybe it's this podcast.
Well, I had a guest on where his podcast is When Words Fail, Music Speaks, and he talks about the healing power of music. And I was like, maybe I've been doing mindfulness the wrong way this whole time. I should pull out the vinyl, throw on the Van Morrison, and just sit and listen to music. And I've tried it since I had that call with him, and that is how I turned my brain off. And I was like, I've been doing this wrong for years. I've been so frustrated.
Walk out. Yeah. Walk out. Yeah. Like I just, yeah. You know, I was really in depth in yoga and just like on the path of enlightenment. I'm going to roll my eyes because it's like there, it's not neuro affirming. It's not like neuro, it's very ableist. It's very much like, oh, well, this is how you heal, and you just calm your mind and you get super centered. And I can meditate. Like I can put myself into a meditative state really quick. It doesn't change the wiring of my brain. Like,
right.
I mean, actually, so let me take that back, because there are studies that it does change your brain. What I'm saying is that I will always work 10 times harder to achieve that state. And if I put my sense of self and my self-worth on my ability to have that calm state, I will never be find happiness. So
yeah.
Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. And when you were talking about, you know, finding yoga and finding your calm, so we just, when my youngest graduated high school, we bought this farm in the mountains of Kentucky, and we never planned on buying this much land. I'd never even been to Kentucky, but we found this massive 170 acre farm in the mountains. It's beautiful. And right after we closed and we were waiting for them to, we moved my in-laws into the original house and we were building our house. And so we were up here and we had just closed. And I was sitting on the front porch. I was just staring at these mountains and the trees that were around me. And it was the first time ever in my life that I felt calm. And it took me so by surprise because I didn't understand. I was like, what is going on? And it is that this, like, I would have never guessed, this was never the plan, that I found this like little slice of heaven and somehow it makes me feel calm. It's the weirdest thing.
Nature is, so we were talking a little bit about like coping mechanisms. Nature has always been my place. Like, and my son, I'll take him out. He'll put his hands in the mud. We will be out and we will be the happiest people. Like, that's the kind of, I'm like, we should go find a house in the mountains.
In the mountains. Yeah. Well, it's definitely, I mean, if you're talking about getting your hands in the mud, I mean, it's very grounding. I mean, that you're supposed to, you know, what if you travel overseas and come back, you're supposed to take your shoes off and, you know, put them in the dirt, your feet in your dirt, so you can ground back to where, you know, the polarity of where you're at. So it makes sense. I've just never been a nature person. I burn immediately if I walk outside without like almost cartoonish like layers. I am allergic to most species of mosquitoes. And so I get like these silver dollar size whelps. So it's never really been my thing. And then I was just like, oh my gosh. So I'm like starting to figure out how I can be in nature without, you know, getting eaten alive and being burned. I didn't even think about it because there's no pollution at all. So it's just the sun. So even when it's cold outside, I can get a sunburn. So I've like started wearing hats and stuff like that because I just didn't know.
It's funny. Yeah. Cause so I'm obviously, because my son's autistic, but I'm also like super sensory sensitive, but like I have a friend who has like an Instagram page and it's all about like neuroaffirming. And it was talking about the nature piece and people that are sensitive, like get outside, but like take care of your sensory needs, you know, like, you know, wear that wide brimmed hat, make sure you have your snacks and your water, is like baby yourself, you know, in nature, you know, and because it really is like it to this day, one of my favorite coping mechanisms for mental health. In fact, actually, like I was telling you about the perimenopause going into it, like I'm full cycle from that postpartum depression. Now I'm in perimenopause. So like this, I was having a tough time yesterday. And so today, like one of my coping mechanisms is like, when I do go through those hard times, I'm like, okay, what are you going to do tomorrow? Cause tomorrow's a new day that is going to snap you into a different place. And so it was pouring down rain. I got on all my rain gear and I went walking around the neighborhood. There's some open space down the road and I was the only person in the world out there and I loved it. It was just magical.
I've always found that when you plan to walk in the rain, it's always been really relaxing to me. But if you get stuck out in the rain and you're running, you've got groceries and stuff, then the rain is very stressful. But if you're like, okay, I'm going to have a raincoat and I'm going to wear boots, then walking out, being out in the rain is so amazing. It's just, people don't ever really have those moments because they're constantly trying to run in from out of the rain. And that's not relaxing. You're not dressed for it. You're all sticky and your clothes are damp. So
I think it is like about like, that's like the sensory needs, right? Like, cause I had my rain boots, I had very, very warm, comfortable pants, warm jacket. So I was so comfortable. Yeah. But you're right. If I had not planned, like it would be stressful.
Yeah, sort of. And yes, it's definitely a very, a different sensation for the exact same thing. So, I mean, it's really interesting how we're not being, you know, educated more on the neurodivergent and trying to figure out these sensory things, because I feel like, you know, yes, when someone's diagnosed with autism, they're seeing this bigger scale of it. But then we all have, I think everybody I've ever met has some kind of sensory thing. You know what I mean? Like there's one of my children, he would never wear shirts with buttons because the button, like the thread where they would thread the button on the shirt bugged him. So he couldn't wear any of the hand-me-downs that my older son had because all of his were little polos, but and it was like the only thing, he just could not stand the buttons. And so it's like these little sensory things that you don't really think about, but then.
I think if we were better meeting people's sensory needs, and I think we would be better off as a society. But I mean, because everybody does, I think there is like a certain surface level that we are accommodating. But then when you have, like, when you really have like the SPD, like true SPD in the brain, like there's such a difference where it's like the way that they feel things is so magnified. So, you know, it's truly like a whole other level of being sensitive. And what I notice is like people don't want to accommodate others. Like not everybody.
Right.
But on a larger scale, we don't want to accommodate people.
Yeah, like it's kind of like, okay, well, I'm making this accommodation and this accommodation, where does it, people are like kind of like, okay, where does it end? And I hear them say that about a lot of things. Okay, well, we've given, you know, we've accepted this and we've accepted this. Well, when do we have to, you know, stop accepting things? And I'm like, well, we're still learning about everybody. We didn't know about all of these things 20 years ago. Like, so I mean, it's really interesting when you hear those people being like, well, what's next? And where does it end? And I'm like, well, it probably never does, because we're going to continue to evolve and we're going to continue to have different needs. So it'll never end, because if we somehow managed to make the world perfect for everyone living in it today, tomorrow it would need to be different. And I think that that's one of those things. Everybody has got to learn how to be like a little bit more fluid with the ideas of how things adapt and change and evolve.
Yeah, like I think that's the idea of being present, right? Like it's not like getting, because we do, you know, I think that's a sensory need too. It's like, I just want things to stop changing, you know, like that's so human.
Yeah.
It's so human. And we need to be better at holding two things at once. There's this, and we just need to like hear each other, respect each other. And, you know, like, because we are all different. And it's, I think what really, the people really hurting people are the people who can't accept differences and can't accept that maybe someone wants to be in the world in a different way, you know. And that goes with racism, whether it's like the trans community, whether it, or it's like the autistic community, you know. It's like ABA therapy is like the golden standard for autistics, and it's basically dog training. And because they want autistic children to look like everybody else, and I feel like what society is really good at is like keeping people quiet, like talking about what's truly going on. And I really feel like that talking about truly what's going on is the window to helping mental health. Because remember what I said, oh, it's about postpartum depression. Like the tribe needs to help the woman, but it's actually both ways. That woman needs to speak what's really going on, because otherwise nobody is able to get inside and know.
Yeah. And that is the whole purpose we're here. That's one thing I've said, like part of my emptiness phase and this podcast and everything, is that I'm going to be 100% my authentic self. And I'm sorry if people don't like it. It is my space to be me and to say what needs to be said. And then also, you know, I'm writing a book that is Alison in Wonderland as well. So I was like, well, the podcast also gives the other people the place to be themselves and say their things and actually get it out there. And I think that that's I always, every episode, I'm like, I swear this isn't like a feminist all women's podcast, but we do end up talking about a lot of women's issues. And I think it's just, it really does speak to, you know, you've got 75 to 80% of people in therapy are women, but it's not because men don't need therapy. They're just less likely to go to the doctor in general. Like you have to force them sometimes. So I think it's really important that, you know, even though I'm not trying to make it that, most of the listening audience is most likely women. So we're getting that message out to people. And I think that that's really important. And it's really interesting because I know when I was a kid, ADD was the hot topic. I don't remember anyone, autism was not something I'd ever even heard of, but yeah. It was ADD and everybody was instantly getting put on medication for it because they just wanted those kids to calm down. I can't take medicine for ADD because I have like an extremely high resting heart rate. So like medicine for me, when they tried to medicate me for ADD, it went very wrong. And I think that that's an interesting concept too, that they wanted all of these kids, that half of which probably didn't even have ADD. they were acting up in class. And so they were medicating all of them so that they would sit down and be quiet.
Oh my gosh. And this just brings me to the heart of such a whole other topic. And that's like, people don't want the label anymore because the label means medication now, but the label is very important because then you can get the understanding and the self-love that you really need to, like, this isn't just like, there's not something inherently wrong with me. My brain's just different, right. You know, like really like being able to love yourself depends on understanding yourself. And then but I know parents that do not want to label their kids because to them, it's like the trauma from all that medication.
The chaos that they saw happen with them. Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of those things too, is like, I'm like, okay, I have PTSD. I'm not PTSD, but I have PTSD. I have ADD. I'm not ADD. So I think it's kind of owning that there are these things that I overcome every day, but they don't define me. They're maybe the fact that I'm able to overcome them and fight them and things that kind of defines me a little bit as being a fighter.
it's we need to get better at holding two things at once.
Like
it's this and this. It's like, because the labels I've never been defined by those labels. I get that some people hold that as their identity. And I do think that can be harmful to the person, because every human is unique and has so much more than just one aspect of themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we probably have like three more episodes in us, but I want to be respectful of your time. Was there anything that you really wanted to cover today that we didn't get to cover?
I mean, I'm sure there's something, and I'm happy to get on here with you again. I really think the world just needs to talk more about this. So I love what you're doing, and keep it up.
Well, thank you. And I'm really glad that I've met you, and we will probably have another one. I didn't even know perimenopause was a thing, so I'm going to have to do research now. I mean, really, that's how like isolated we are. I'm like, I have no idea.
We're handing that stuff down. Yeah, well, happy to do another one with you sometime about perimenopause, because that's where I'm at, and I love talking about where I'm at.
Absolutely. That's why I'm constantly talking about being an empty nester, and people are like, you look too young, and I'm like, yeah, well, it's still a thing. But yeah, so yeah. I thank you so much for coming on the show. I will save all of the links and share it on the profiles when they come, but it's happymamabody.com, and you do a free consultation, right? A discovery call?
I do a discovery call because like not everyone's right for to work with me. So
yeah, I've been meeting a lot of people that do that too. And I think that it's a really good way of doing things, because you have to find the right fit, you know, to make what are you doing? It's like, it took me 20 years to find the right therapist. thank you so much for coming on, and we will definitely talk again. I know it, because I've already got like three other topics in my head.
I love talking with you. It's so great. And yes. great rest of your day. And thank you for having me on here, really.
Thanks. Yeah, thank you for coming.